This is an ABC podcast.
Hello and welcome to The World Today. I'm Sally Sara. This Tuesday, a record 44,000 COVID tests and 8 new cases in Sydney. Are we on track to quash Australia's latest flare-up of the virus? And we find out how the border closures mean for the tourism industry, which had been hoping for a summer recovery.
So the booking cancellation started immediately after the North Sydney outbreak notification, and the majority of those people that were cancelling were not booking from North Sydney or from Sydney. They were people from Victoria. I'm incredibly hopeful that the financial impact will be either zero or minimal. We're madly going through our wait list the minute a cancellation happens.
We start today in New South Wales, and the list of venues linked to the Northern Beaches COVID cluster continues to grow, but the number of new infections is down on yesterday. 8 new community cases were recorded over the latest 24-hour period, 7 of them linked to the Avalon outbreak. That's fueling hopes that a local lockdown could be eased as early as tomorrow. Our reporter Barbara Miller joins me now in the studio. Barb, good afternoon. First of all, this 8th case not linked to the known cluster, can you tell us about that?
This, Sally, we're told, is a nurse from Western Sydney, and this nurse was involved in transporting people from hotel quarantine. We're also told that a close workplace contact of that person has also tested positive, but that result came in after 8 p.m. last night. So that positive result will be included in tomorrow's figures. Now, the assumption is that these two people would have picked up the virus from their workplace, but genomic sequencing is, of course, being carried out. Here's the Chief Health Officer, Dr. Kerry Chant.
The healthcare worker who was involved in the transport, which is the 8th case that we're under investigation, we are aware that they transported a symptomatic family of 3 from the airport on the 14th of December. Obviously, given that history, we would believe that the person acquired it through their work in transporting the patient, but we always keep an open mind.
That's Dr. Kerry Chant. And Bob, for the numbers overall for the Northern Beaches cluster, they're down from the 15 recorded yesterday and 30 the day before that. Do authorities think that they're now getting on top of this outbreak?
So what the Premier Gladys Berejiklian says is that these numbers are a sign that the policy and the response is working. However, there are still now 90 people in that cluster, and the list of venues that they're connected with is continuing to grow. The Premier says she won't rule in or out that she will ease a local lockdown, which is due to which is in force at the moment until midnight tomorrow. She has, however, indicated that that Christmas is certainly influencing her decision.
The decision would be much easier if it wasn't this time of year. If it wasn't this time of year, the decision would be much easier. But obviously, we do need to consider mental health issues. We need to consider what people are going through as part of that decision as well. But we also need to consider what it means for our 8 million citizens across the state. And that's why we will be taking the best advice available at that time. And that's why we always say that during a pandemic, things evolve by the hour.
That's the New South Wales Premier, Gladys Berejiklian. And Bob Miller, just finally, one case in Victoria, a traveller returning from Sydney. Can you tell us what we know there?
This is a 15-year-old girl. She was visiting the Northern Beaches area with a parent. We're told that she visited multiple sites in the Northern Beaches, which have now been connected to positive cases. The parent and the child drove back to Victoria. We're told that once they crossed into Victoria, they did not stop. So there are no known exposure sites of that case in Victoria. The person stayed at home, the young teenager, and then was tested. Now that border is closed to people from Greater Sydney and from the Central Coast. Other New South Wales residents need a permit. And there's some pretty strong warnings out of Victoria for anyone who tries to circumvent that ban. Here's the Victorian Health Minister, Martin Foley.
Anybody who arrives or is found from a red zone in Victoria will be immediately taken into the hotel quarantine system for the duration of their quarantine period. As of last night, 17 people, including a family of five, have been transferred to Victoria's hotel quarantining program from New South Wales. That is 17 people who will be spending their Christmas and their New Year, not as how they planned, but in hotel quarantining circumstances.
That's the Victorian Health Minister, Martin Foley. And before that, our reporter, Barbara Miller, giving us the latest on the outbreak on the northern beaches in New South Wales. Well, the latest COVID figures in New South Wales have been welcomed by many public health experts. I spoke a short time ago to Peter Collingham, who's Professor of Infectious Diseases at the ANU Medical School in Canberra.
Well, I think it's reassuring, and overall it's better news than a couple of days ago when, you know, there were 30 cases. So this is good news. It looks like it's heading in the right direction. And most importantly, my understanding is that all these cases are associated close, you know, contacts of people with known infection. So that actually means this is still a cluster. And the significance of a cluster is that you should know who all these contacts are. If you've got good contact tracing, these people should mainly be in isolation and quarantine anyway. And it means there's not the same potential for it to spread rapidly through the community because these people are essentially predominantly in quarantine.
Peter, I think a lot of people have the fears of a Victorian-style second wave at the front of mind. How different is this current situation from the early days of what unfolded in Victoria?
Well, I think it's very different. First of all, we've got a big advantage that this is summer rather than winter and viruses spread less readily. They can spread, but less readily. But the other thing, if you look at Victoria, basically there was uncontrolled spread. There were huge numbers of mystery cases. There were large numbers occurring per day. And the thing is, for every mystery case, that means there's one other person you haven't identified yet. And the numbers were substantially higher than what's occurring in Sydney. Now, Melbourne did leak across state borders. It came to the ACT, it came to Sydney, it came to Brisbane. But you might remember even when Sydney had, you know, about a couple of hundred cases from the Crossroads episode in winter, that didn't really go to over the state borders, despite being winter and despite having more cases than they've got now. So I think this is really reassuring. First of all, to spread to other states or areas is now looking less likely.
What do you think about the way New South Wales has handled this particular episode so far?
Well, I think it's been pretty good. If you look at it, it's under control. They haven't locked down the whole city. They've locked down the hot zone. And even that has been not a complete lockdown, but just getting people to cooperate. They've had people wearing masks, particularly in those areas. People are wearing more masks in, you know, areas where it's at risk, public transport, indoors, etc., in crowded venues. So far, it appears to have gone the right way.
What do you think about the reaction of the other states to this outbreak in New South Wales?
Well, I think a lot of it has been, I think, an overreaction. And the reality is this is a cluster. It's combined, confined basically to the northern beaches. And, you know, the other people who have got infections, even in Sydney, have been related to that. So the chance that this would spread widely is still relatively small. And to close your state to a whole, you know, all of New South Wales seems to be a bit excessive. So far, there's not even spread to the rest of Sydney in any way, yet alone to regional New South Wales. But, you know, Western Australia, for instance, regards people as Dubbo, you know, as being the same risk as Sydney, which is patently not the case. And, you know, we need to actually, I think, come up with realistic definitions that everybody agrees on what a hot zone is. If you live in a hot zone, that region, I think, does have to be clamped down on movements and restricted travel, and I think some restriction to going to other regions and interstate. But that's different to basically taking a whole state where the risks are very different across the state and basically saying you can't travel for at least 14 or 28 days because that's usually how long it, you know, takes to lift these restrictions. So I think, you know, we've got to have confidence in all our states that our contact tracing, our testing, et cetera, will find the cases, will be able to stop them moving around, quarantine individuals as appropriate, and that will stop widespread infection, particularly in summer where the risk is lower than winter, and, you know, basically not react too quickly because this is a problem we're going to have for another year or two. Even when we have a lot of people vaccinated, it's not 100% effective, and there's so much overseas that can still come back with either people vaccinated or two people vaccinated if we, you know, don't have, you know, good controls on or the optimal controls, particularly of people who are coming into quarantine hotels or people coming from overseas.
We have seen one case come into Victoria today, so there has been some movement, but it sounds like you're saying even with that, it's not necessary to lock a whole state out of another state.
Well, my view would be that case in Victoria is an example of the system working. That person, I understood, came from the hot zone and they were in some sort of isolation or quarantine. And therefore, when found to be positive, they weren't freely moving around Victoria. So I actually think if you take the hot zone policy and you restrict people wherever they go, not only within New South Wales but interstate, that should stop the spread going widely through any community.
That's Peter Collignon, Professor of Infectious Diseases at ANU Medical School in Canberra. Well, tourism operators say they're already getting cancellations for the Christmas holidays as uncertainty grows around the COVID-19 outbreak on Sydney's northern beaches. It's not only the fact that Sydney siders are now blocked from heading interstate, people from Victoria are cancelling their trips into southern parts of New South Wales, worried if the border restrictions are suddenly tightened. David Sparks reports.
On the far southern coast of New South Wales, the coastal tourist town of Tathra is 400 kilometres away from Sydney, and most of its visitors tend to come up from Victoria. But Carmen Risby at the Tathra Beachside Holiday Park says this week many Victorians have started cancelling their trip.
So the booking cancellations started immediately after the North Sydney outbreak notification. And the majority of those people that were cancelling were not bookings from North Sydney or from Sydney. They were people from Victoria.
And what are they saying to you when they're cancelling their bookings?
They're confused. They haven't had clear direction. They don't understand the two states' rules, and they're trying as hard as they can to deal with Victorian health. But on the same token, if they're crossing the border, they need to start looking at New South Wales health. You know, they don't have the right apps on their phone because we've all got, you know, Service New South Wales check-in apps for everything. And so because there's not a national scheme or there's no real national code here or anything to listen to, it's very confusing for people that are across the border.
Despite the loss of some Victorian visitors, Ms. Risby believes tourists who live in regional New South Wales will come in and soften the blow.
I'm incredibly hopeful that the financial impact will be either zero or minimal because most people have a wait list and we're madly going through our wait list the minute a cancellation happens. And so far, they've been filling. The other thing that's happening is the same scenario is happening at the other end of our state. And so the Queensland border control is slightly harsher. So where we've got someone from Victoria cancelling, we're taking a new booking from someone who can't travel to Queensland.
On Queensland's Gold Coast, cafe owner Timothy Gubbe expects to lose customers as a result of his state government's decision to block Sydney residents at the border, but he believes the impact will be minimal.
I guess it'll have some sort of impact. I just know there's a resort just near me here and they've had a few cancellations, and I've got a real estate agent alongside me too, and they've had some cancellations from Sydney people. You know, there's a lot of people holidaying. They probably normally may go overseas as well within Queensland that can't do that, so they're still coming here anyway. So, you know, there's going to be a bit of a drop-off for sure with some Sydney people, but for myself, it's not probably going to affect me too much.
And a little further north in Surfers Paradise, another cafe owner, Kate Madison, is also keeping optimistic.
Yeah, I think we'll take less money over this period. But I think that regardless of the rules of how many people we can have or how many people are allowed into the state, when people are scared of disease, it doesn't matter what the rules are, people are scared, so they go back in their shells.
Regardless of the impact to her business, she thinks political leaders at all levels are managing the situation well.
I'm just grateful I live in a country where whatever side of politics it is, they all seem to be making fairly reasonable decisions. So whether or not I agree with Anastasia or with Scott Morrison, the point is we live in a country where they're just doing their best and we seem to be doing our best better than most other places.
The Federal Tourism Minister, Simon Birmingham, is calling on tourism operators to show flexibility so that people who need to cancel will be more likely to come back in the future.
I'd really urge both businesses and consumers to show a bit of consideration and a bit of patience in both directions, that for tourism operators, wherever they possibly can, to process refunds swiftly, to arrange travel credits as quickly as possible, that's all important to maintain confidence around future bookings and to get people back travelling as quick as they possibly can.
That's Tourism Minister Simon Birmingham ending David Sparks' report. On ABC Radio across Australia, streaming online and on the ABC Listen app, this is The World Today. Thanks for your company. You can find all of our stories on the show's website. Just search for The World Today, and you can also subscribe to our podcast. Overseas now, and Britain has been cut off from much of the rest of Europe amid growing alarm about a new COVID variant. At the same time, there's growing anger directed towards Prime Minister Boris Johnson's government that more wasn't done sooner. Millions of Britons have now had their Christmas plans upended, and border closures have led to fears that there'll be a shortage of fresh food by Christmas Day. Rachel Mealy reports.
It's not just Christmas travel that's under threat for the English this year, but Christmas dinner as well. France has closed its border with the UK for 48 hours, and that's stopped trucks coming into England, which usually carry tons of fresh produce in every day. Ian Wright is the Director General of the UK Food and Drink Federation.
Lorry drivers who make round trips from the continent of Europe into the UK and are mostly European rather than UK citizens are increasingly unwilling to come here because they're afraid they'll get stuck either in the traffic jam or that they won't be able to find a load to take back and the economics of their journey will be impacted, or that they will get quarantined here.
Right.
That threatens supply towards the end of this week and into next week.
Sainsbury's, one of the major supermarket chains, has also expressed concern about supply chains.
Sainsbury's continue, if nothing changes, we will, according to the retailer, start to see gaps over the coming days on lettuce, some salad leaves, cauliflowers, broccoli and citrus fruit. And in addition to that, Sainsbury says that they hope that the UK and French governments can come to a mutually agreeable solution that prioritises the immediate passage of produce and any other food at the ports.
That's something that the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson and French President Emmanuel Macron are working on. The UK Prime Minister says a deal allowing trucks through the borders is imminent.
Government at all levels is communicating with our friends in Paris. I've just spoken to President Macron. We had a very good call, and we both understand each other's positions and want to resolve these problems as fast as possible.
Boris Johnson is also heading off criticism that the shutdown has come too late. After telling the British public that health authorities had been monitoring the new COVID variant for weeks and believed it to be more transmissible, he's now facing questions about why he didn't act sooner.
And to our international friends and partners, I want to say very frankly that we understand your concerns, and I hope everybody can see that as soon as we were briefed in UK government on the fast transmissibility of this new strain at, I think, 3:15 on Friday afternoon, we lodged all the necessary information with the World Health Organization, and we took prompt and decisive action the very next day to curb the spread of the new variant within the UK.
But that optimism wasn't shared by everyone. The UK's chief scientist, Sir Patrick Vallance, says the new strain was appearing across Britain and cases would rise after inevitable mixing at Christmas.
We know that this new variant is moving through the population quite quickly, and because it's infecting more people in a given amount of time than the previous variant, it is causing a rapid rise in both cases of disease in the community, and it appears to be having a knock-on effect in admissions to hospital in London and the South East.
He's warned that the new variant could become dominant across the globe in coming months.
It would take a matter of months in each individual country, but not much longer than that. The virus is able to move quite quickly. As vaccination is introduced, however, we will see reduced transmission, and that will slow the virus down.
500,000 people have already been vaccinated in the UK. In the US, the vaccine rollout continues, with US President-elect Joe Biden the latest to roll up his sleeve to receive the jab live on television. Wearing a mask and a navy skivvy, the 78-year-old told the nurse he didn't want a countdown to the injection and that she should go ahead when she was ready.
What I want to say is we owe these folks an awful lot. The scientists and the people who put this together, the frontline workers, the people who were the ones who actually did the clinical work. It's just amazing. It's worth saying that this is great hope. I'm doing this to demonstrate that people should be prepared when it's available to take the vaccine. There's nothing to worry about.
There's no word yet from the White House if Donald Trump will follow suit.
That's Rachel Mealy reporting. And finally today, the uncertainty and isolation of this year has taken a toll on people's well-being, with many support organisations finding an increased demand for services. And they're worried that the need will become greater as we head into the Christmas period, a time when loneliness is more acutely felt by some. Researchers say that loneliness is poorly understood in Australia and more needs to be done to reduce stigma and make more meaningful interventions. Sarah Sedgie reports.
Peter Gardner has been volunteering with the Red Cross for more than 4 years now, making calls to check on people's well-being. He knows that this can be a hard time of year for many.
A lot of the people are on their own. Quite a few of them, we are probably the only person they will speak to that day, the only human voice they hear. At a time when everyone's supposed to be happy and be surrounded by family and friends, some of them feel that very intensely.
For the people he checks in on, the pandemic has only exacerbated those feelings.
Many of them have been isolated this year because they are people at risk due to age and other health issues that they have.
Recent research by the Red Cross has found that one in four people are worried they'll feel lonely over the holidays. Half of the 1,000 people surveyed who were over 65 or unemployed said they didn't have any plans for Christmas Day. Dr. Michelle Lim is the scientific chair of Ending Loneliness Together, a group of organisations working together on the issue.
Christmas generally tends to be a time of stress for the people who don't have people around them. The feelings of loneliness can feel quite exacerbated.
She says problematic levels of loneliness can affect 5 million Australians at any one time, and that people can be lonely even when they're not isolated. Her organisation recently released a white paper on loneliness. Dr. Lim says more research is urgently needed and that service providers such as those in health and aged care need to know how to identify those that are lonely and intervene meaningfully.
The issue that we have more generally within Australia is that people don't understand what loneliness is. You know, oh, I'm with other people, so I'm not lonely. I'm working, so I'm not lonely. But actually, loneliness is actually an experience that I think that people tend to reject or ignore or deny because they don't get the permission more widely to feel that way when in fact it's quite a common experience. You know, there's a lot of good work being done out there, but there's a lack of coordination around how do you identify if someone's lonely? How do you help people who are lonely?
It's an issue that also worries Dr. Adele Madolo. She's the executive director of the Multicultural Centre for Women's Health.
I'm particularly concerned about a few specific groups within the population of migrant women. One of them is new mums. When things are as they usually are, many migrant women will have their families come over and stay with them in the very early period of parenting. At the moment, that hasn't been possible because people can't travel. So we're finding that there's quite a lot of new mums who don't have the support that they need, and that puts them at increased risk of loneliness, of course, as well as other mental health concerns like depression and perinatal mental health issues more generally.
She's also concerned for older migrant women.
That's also the same cohort that isn't connected digitally. They're more at risk of infection and therefore tend to be much more isolated.
She also agrees that meaningful social connections can prevent loneliness.
Social connection where there's equality and respect in the community, because you can be connected But if there's not a sense of belonging and valuing of everybody equally, people can also lose that connection.
And as Peter Gardner has found, even small actions make a difference.
It's little simple things that make the big differences to people in their lives, to be noted, to be thought of, to be remembered.
That's Red Cross volunteer Peter Gardner ending Sarah Sedgie's report. And if this story has raised any concerns for you or anyone you know, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14. And in breaking news, to finish up the program, West Australians can look forward to a Christmas Day reunion with relatives and friends from South Australia. The WA Premier has confirmed the resumption of quarantine-free travel from midnight on Christmas morning. That's all from the World Today team for this Tuesday. Have a safe afternoon.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.